Gulliver's Travels, Part 1, Chapter 3. The author diverts the emperor and his nobility of both sexes in a very uncommon manner. The diversions of the court of Lilliput described, the author has his liberty granted upon him upon certain conditions. My gentleness and good behavior had gained so far on the emperor and his court, and indeed upon the army and the people in general, that I began to conceive hopes of getting my liberty in a short time. I took all possible methods to cultivate this favorable position. The natives came, by degrees, to be less apprehensive of any danger for me. I would sometimes lie down and let 5 or 6 of them dance in my hand, and at last the boys and girls would venture to come and play hide-and-seek in my hair. I had now made a good progress in understanding and speaking the language. The emperor had a mind one day entertain me with several of the country shows, wherein they exceed all nations I have known, for both dexterity and magnificence. I was diverted with none so much as that of the rope dancers, performed upon a slender white thread, extended about 2 feet and 12 inches from the ground, upon which I shall desire liberty, with the reader's patience, to enlarge a little. This diversion is only practiced by those persons who are candidates for great employments and high favor at court. They are trained in this art from their youth, and not are always of noble birth or liberal education. When a great office is vacant, either by death or disgrace, which often happens, 5 or 6 of those candidates petition the emperor to entertain his majesty in the court with a dance on the rope, and whoever jumps the highest, without falling, succeeds in the office. Very often the chief ministers themselves are commanded to show their skill and to convince the emperor that they have not lost their faculty. Flimnap, the treasurer, is allowed to cut a paper on the straight rope, at least an inch higher than any other lord in the whole empire. I have seen him do the somerset several times together upon a trencher fixed on a rope, which is no thinner than a common pack thread in England. My friend, Rodrezel, principal secretary for private affairs, is, in my opinion, if I am not partial, the second after the treasurer. The rest of the great officers are much upon a par. These diversions are often attended with fatal accidents, whereof great numbers are on record. I myself have seen 2 or 3 candidates break a limb, but the danger is much greater when the ministers themselves are commanded to show their dexterity, for, by contending to excel themselves and their fellows, they strain so far that there is hardly one of them who has not received a fall, and some of them 2 or 3. I was assured that 1 or 2 before my arrival, Flimnap would infallibly have broken his neck if one of the king's cushions that accidentally lay on the ground had not weakened the force of his fall. There is likewise another diversion, which is only shown before the emperors and empress, and first minister, upon particular occasions. The emperor lays on the table 3 fine silken threads of 6 inches long, one is blue, the other is red, and the third is green. These threads are proposed as prizes for those persons whom the emperor has mind to distinguish by a particular mark of his favor. The ceremony is performed in His Majesty's great chamber of state, where the candidates are to undergo a trial of dexterity very different from the former, and such as I have not observed the least resemblance in every country of the new or old world. The emperor holds a stick in his hands, both ends parallel to the horizons, while the candidates advancing, one by one, sometimes leap over the stick, sometimes creep under it, backward and forward, several times, according as the stick is advanced or depressed. Sometimes the emperor holds one end of the stick, and his first minister the other. Sometimes the minister has it entirely to himself. Whoever performs his part with most agility and holds out the longest in leaping and creeping is rewarded with the blue-colored silk. The red is given to the next and the green to the third, which they all wear girt twice around the middle, and you can see few great persons about this court who are not adorned with one of these girdles. The horses of the army and those of the royal stables, having daily led to me, were no longer shy, but would come up to my very feet without startling. The riders would leap them over my hand as I held it on the ground, and one of the emperor's huntsmen, upon a large courser, took my foot, shoe and all, which was indeed a prodigious leap. I had the fortune to divert the emperor one day, after very extraordinarily manner. I desire he would order several sticks of 2 feet high in the thickness of an ordinary cane to be drawn to me, whereupon His Majesty commanded the master of his woods to give the directions accordingly. And the next morning, 6 woodsmen arrived with as many carriages, drawn by 8 horses to each. I took 9 of the sticks, and fixing them firmly in the ground in a quadrilateral figure, 2 feet and a half square, I took 4 other sticks and tied them parallel at each corner, about 2 feet from the ground. Then I fastened my handkerchief to the 9 sticks that stood erect, and extended on all sides, till it was tight as the top of a drum, and the 4 parallel sticks, rising about 5 inches higher than the handkerchief, served as long ledges on each side. When I had finished my work, I desired the emperor to let a troop of his best horses, 24 in number, come and exercise upon this plain. His majesty approved of the proposal, and I took them up, one by one, in my hands, ready mounted and armed, with the proper officers to exercise them. As soon as they got in order, they divided into two parties, and performed mock skirmishes, discharged blunt arrows, and drew their swords, fled and pursued, attacked and retired, and in short discovered the best military discipline I had ever beheld. These parallel sticks secured them and their horses from falling over the stage, and the emperor was so much delighted that he ordered this entertainment to be repeated several days, and once was pleased to be lifted up and give the word of command, and with great difficulty persuaded even the empress herself to let me hold her in her close chair within 2 yards of the stage, where she was able to take a full view of the whole performance. It was my good fortune that no ill accident happened in these entertainments. Only once a fiery horse that belonged to the captain's, pawing with his hoof, struck a hole in my handkerchief, and his foot slipping, he overthrew his rider and himself. But I immediately relieved them both, and covering the hole with one hand, I set down the troop with the other, in the same manner as I took them up. The horse that fell was strained in the left shoulder, but the rider got no hurt. And I repaired my handkerchief as well as I could, however, I would not trust the strength of it any more in such dangerous enterprises. About 2 or 3 days before I was set at liberty, as I was entertaining the court with this kind of feat, there arrived an express to inform His Majesty that some of his subjects, riding near the place where I was first taken up, had seen a great black substance lying on the around, very oddly shaped, extending its edges around, as wide as His Majesty's bedchamber, and rising up in the middle as high as a man, that it was no living creature as they first apprehended, for it lay on the grass without motion, and some of them had walked around it several times, that by mounting upon each other's shoulders they had got to the top, which was flat, and stamping on it they found that it was hollow within, that they humbly conceived it might belong something to the Man Mountain, and if His Majesty pleased, they would undertake to bring it with only 5 horses. I presently knew what they meant, and was glad at heart to receive this intelligence. It seems, upon my first reaching the shore after our shipwreck, I was in such confusion that before I came to the place where I went to sleep, my hat, which I had fastened with all the strings in my head while I was rowing, had stuck on all the time I was swimming, fell off after I came to land, the string, as I conjecture, breaking by some accident which I never observed, but thought my hat had been lost at sea. I entreated His Imperial Majesty to give orders it might be brought to me as soon as possible, describing to him the use and nature of it. The next day the wagoners arrived with it, but not in very good condition. They had bored 2 holes in the brim, within an inch and a half of the edge, and fastened 2 hooks in the holes. These hooks were tied by a long cord to the harness, and thus my hat was dragged along for about half an English mile. But the ground in that country being extremely smooth and level, it received less damage than I expected. 2 days after this adventure, the emperor, having ordered that part of his army which quarters in and about his metropolis to be in readiness, took a fancy of diverting himself in a very singular manner. He desired I would stand like a colossus, with my legs as far asunder as I conveniently could, and then he commanded his general, who was an old and experienced leader and a great patron of mine, to draw up the troops in close order and march them under me, the foot by 24 abreast, and the horse by 16. With drums beating, colours flying, and pikes advanced, this body consisted of 3,000 foot and 1,000 horse. His Majesty gave orders, upon pain of death, that every soldier in his march should observe the strictest decency with regard to my person, which, however, could not prevent some of the younger officers from turning up their eyes as they passed under me, and, to confess the truth, my breeches were at the time in so ill a condition that they afforded some opportunities for laughter and admiration. I had sent so many memorials and petitions for my liberty that His Majesty at length mentioned the matter, first in the cabinet and then in full council, where it was opposed by none except Skyrish Bolgolam, who was pleased without any provocation to be my mortal enemy. But it was carried against him by the whole board, and confirmed by the emperor. That minister was Galbay, or admiral of the realm, very much in his master's confidence, and a person well versed in affairs, but of a morose and sour complexion. However, he was at length persuaded to comply, but prevailed that the articles and conditions upon which I should be set free, and to which I must swear should be drawn up by himself. These articles were brought to me by Skyrish Bolgolam in person, attended by 2 under-secretaries and several persons of distinction. After they were read, I was demanded to swear to performance of them, first in the matter of my own country, and afterwards in the method prescribed by their laws, which was to hold my right foot in my left hand, and to place the middle finger of my right hand on the crown of my head, and my thumb on the tip of my right ear, But because the reader may be curious to have some idea of the style and manner of expression peculiar to that people, as well as I know the article upon which I recovered my liberty, I have made a translation of the whole instrument, word for word, as near as I was able, which I here offer to the public. Golbastu mamarim elvem guerlirdo shefin muli oligu, most mighty emperor of Lilliput, delight and terror of the universe, whose dominions extend 5,000 blustrogs, about 12 miles in circumference, to the extremities of the globe, monarch of all monarchs, taller than the sons of men, whose feet press down to the centre, and whose head strikes against the sun, at whose nod the princes of earth shake their knees, pleasant as the spring, comfortable as the summer, fruitful as autumn, dreadful as winter, his most sublime majesty promises to the Man Mountain, lately arrived at our celestial dominions, the following articles, which by a solemn oath he shall be obliged to perform. First, the Man Mountain shall not depart from our dominions without our license under our great seal. Second, he shall not presume to come into our metropolis without our express order, at which time the inhabitants shall have 2 hours' warning to keep within doors. Third, the said Man Mountain shall confine his walks to our principal high roads, and not offer to walk or lie down in a meadow or a field of corn. Fourth, as he walks the said roads, he shall take the utmost care not to trample upon the bodies of any of our loving subjects, their horses or carriages, nor take any of our subjects into his hands without their own consent. Fifth, if an express requires extraordinary dispatch, the Man Mountain shall be obliged to carry in his pocket the messenger and a horse a 6 days' journey once in every moon, and return the said messenger back, if so required, safe to our imperial presence. Sixth, he shall be our ally against our enemies in the island of Blefuscu, and do his utmost to destroy their fleet, which is now preparing to invade us. Seventh, that the said Man Mountain shall, at his times of leisure, be aiding and assisting to our workmen in helping to raise certain great stones towards covering the wall of the principal park and other our royal buildings. Eighth, that the said Man Mountain shall, in 2 moons' time, deliver in an exact survey the circumference of our dominions by a computation of his own paces round the coast. Lastly, that, upon his solemn oath to observe all of the above articles, the said Man Mountain shall have a daily allowance of meat and drink, sufficient for the support of 1,724 of our subjects, with free access to our royal person and other marks of our favour. Given at our palace at Belfaborock, the 12th day of the 91st moon of our reign. I swore and subscribed to these articles with great cheerfulness and consent, although some of them were not so honourable as I could have wished, which proceeded wholly from the malice of Skyrish Boltgluman, the High Admiral, whereupon my chains were immediately unlocked, and I was at full liberty. The Emperor himself in person did me the honour to be by at the whole ceremony. I made my acknowledgments by prostrating myself at His Majesty's feet, but he commanded me to rise, and after many gracious expressions, which to avoid the censure of vanity I shall not repeat, he added that he hoped I should prove a useful servant, and well deserve all the favours had he already conferred upon me, or might do for the future. The reader may be pleased to observe that in the last article of the recovery of my liberty, the Emperor stipulates to allow me a quantity of meat and drink sufficient for the support of 1,724 Lilliputians. Sometime after, asking a friend at court how they came to fix on that determinate number, he told me that His Majesty's mathematicians, having taken the height of my body by the help of a quadrant, and finding it to exceed theirs by the proportion of 12 to 1, they concluded from the similarity of their bodies that mine must contain at least 1,724 of theirs, and consequently would require as much food as was necessary to support that number of Lilliputians, by which the reader may conceive an idea of ingenuity of that people, as well as the prudent and exact comedy of so great a prince. End of chapter 3. Read by David Russell. For Lit2Go. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.